You're listening to Mucho Culture Radio, Community Voices.
My name is Manav Zora, Western Sahara. It is in the West Africa plain, also on the Atlantic Sea. The capital is called Layoun, and the Western Sahara is the only country in Africa was occupied by Spain. So our second language is Spanish in the Western Sahara. And after Spain left, there was a civil war between the Western Sahara and Morocco. And the Morocco came and occupied the west of the country, the beach side. And the east side was still free under government law. So it is still disputed land. But with that, we lost our island, which is the Canary Island, to Spain. And most people in African countries recognize it as a separate country. But the United Nations doesn't, because Morocco has a claim on half of the land. So it's still distributed land, but it is, we have our own flag, our own embassy, our own country. And when you go to the Moroccan occupied side, people will say we are from the Western Sahara. Okay, the African continent is actually breaking, if you want to break it down in race, they actually have five different races in Africa. There's the North African, the not the Arabs, because the Arabs came in later. They call the Amazigh. The Amazigh tribe, which is different kind of tribe, different languages. They have a different structure, lighter skin, due to the altitude of the from the equator. And then you go to the equator, the Congolese. And the Congolese, they have their own looks. And then there is the West Africans, which were Senegal, Mali. They also have their own shape and looks in Africa. Then there's the Horn of Africa, which they are very mixed. And if you see an Ethiopian, you'll know an Ethiopian from a kilometer, that he doesn't look anything like Congolese, and he doesn't look anything like Amazigh. And the South, we have the San people. And the San people, they look more Asian. But it's all come to Africa. Also, Africa, they break down by tribes, and each tribe has their own languages, own culture, and own identity. And the next tribe next to it, it looks the same. And each area in Africa was broken down by natural border, either mountain, valley, or a river. And each tribe ruled that river, and historically, everybody know from one side, like the Maasai control from Kilimanjaro all the way to Mozambique, and that's a Maasai land. There's one tribe, although there is a lot sub-tribes in the Maasai, but let's say this is the Maasai. And everybody you go in West Africa, which is the most condensed, they have a different language, different fruit, different food. So when somebody says, I want to eat African food, right there, that's a mistake right there. It's like, what kind of African food? It's like if I said, I want to have Asian food, is it Indian or is it Russian or is it Chinese? So Africa is a big diverse. A lot of people say, I ate Kenyan food or Tanzanian food or Mali food. The problem is all the borders that drawn right now, it drawn by the West. And all the borders of the West done for the economical value of that border to the West. So actually they took two blood enemies, tribes, and they put them in one country, one flag, and tell them live in harmony. And they are in enemies 6,000 years. Unfortunately, those borders is created not by natural or language or race base, is based on economical value. So in the West of Africa, we have a lot of, we have two oceans, the Indian on the east and the west. We have the Atlantic in the north, we have the Mediterranean, and we have the Red Sea. And we have the two straits and the Suez Canal. So the value, the biggest diamonds production, biggest gold production in the world, biggest fertile land, the most animals, you name it, we have it in Africa. But what we're missing is management, as we all know. I've been lucky that I lived in Africa for a while. I lived in Namibia and Egypt in Africa. I worked in Nigeria and a lot of places in Africa. I actually worked in every country on the coast of Africa except Somalia and Benin. So I've been lucky, either been working or visited Africa or lived in Africa with my parents. So I've seen the cultures, I've seen the differential in Africa, I've seen the languages, the cultures, the colors, the shapes, the history of it. Like when you go to Ethiopia, you're in totally different history, Eritrea. So the Horn of Africa broken down to four countries. You got Somalia, Benin, Djibouti, and Eritrea. And they have their own looks, their own languages, their own values, their own culture. And they all relate it somehow. When you go to West Africa, if you go anywhere on the coast of Africa, coast of Guinea, you have to eat rice and beans. That's the culture there. Everybody eats rice and beans, right from Senegal all the way to Cameroon. All this coast, they have the common of plantation. They eat plantain. In the east, they don't eat that. They have injera. You go to the north, you have couscous. In the south, mostly barbecue wildlife with the sand people. So Africa is diverse. Africa, it's a multicultural. Africa is a continent that no two are the same. And I always compare it with Asia. When people think Asia, they think more East Asia, which is China, Japan, and Korea. But they forget there is India in Asia, and they forget there is Arabia in Asia, and they forgot that north of Russia and Yuktutaktak, all in part of Asia. So when you say Asia, think about Africa as the same. Well, the problem is when you come to North America and you read African history, first of all, which I disagree with, right away they call it black history. And they basically limit it for people with darker skin. But if you go North Africa, the Amazigh, they're not darker skin. If you go to the Tuareg of the Sahara, they're African-bred, 100% Africans, thousands and thousands of years history, and they're not black. So for a start, you should be saying African history. And the African history in North America starts with slavery. And when you're slavery, they basically deprive you of all your right. And the biggest punishment when I went to the plantation in the south of the United States, the biggest punishment is almost death if somebody knows how to write or read. Because they don't want you to know your history. And deprive somebody history, deprive them of their name, their languages, you adopt to their lifestyle. Most people have last name Smith or John, and they forget about their African name, but they're black. Or somebody actually speak English or French to communicate instead of using African local languages. So we still use it all. So the history of Africa was written by the West to teach us about where we come from. The flags done by the West, the borders done by the West, the languages we use is by the West. So they could play whatever they want about our history. But if you really go back in history, we're the first world countries. They came third. We came first. Even science say even the oldest human come from Africa. So when you go to Africa, you see kingdoms, a lot of kingdoms in Africa, but the famous five kingdoms, and everybody knows the Egyptian kingdoms. And a lot of people, when they say Egypt, a lot of people forget, they think Egypt border is still modern-day Northwest Africa, Egypt. But actually, Egypt was the Nile. And the Nile, there's two Niles. One Nile, they call the White Nile and the Blue Nile. One come from Ethiopia, one come from Lake Victoria in Uganda. And they both unite in Sudan. So Sudan was Egypt, which in Egyptian they called it Upper Egypt. And Egypt today is the South Egypt or Low Egypt. The reason is the birth of the Nile is the High Egypt where the mountain is. And when the Nile died, the meandering river, which happens in Alexandria in Egypt, is the death of the Nile. And everybody live on the Nile. They call them the Nilotic people. Like a lot of people, the Nuba, the Lu in Kenya, they're all Nilotic people. So they're all descendant of the pharaohs to be. So pharaohs means a king, the chosen one. The pharaohs, when you see in his crowns, you always see a snake, a cobra, and a vulture. And that means he's the king of Upper and Lower Egypt. The vulture is where the mountains lives on the crown, which is Sudan today and Uganda. And when you go all the way down to the meandering river, which look like a snake, that means the king, the pharaoh, is the kingdom of that. A country or a kingdom, you have to define that they have a system, they have laws, they have a defined borders, and they have a pyramid party where a head of the states and governor and to the local people, merchandise and everything else. So in Africa, to see those qualifications as the West put in for kingdom, I'll say we qualify most likely five kingdoms. And one of them, the Egyptian, and the Egyptian scientists still paused by how they built the pyramids. Some people say aliens did it, but my simply saying is that African did it. You came, you burned the history, you burned the books, you burned the knowledge, and right now we're struggling to know how our ancestor built them. The Egyptians control the Nile, they know the prediction of the Nile, they know astronomy very well, and they actually spoke more than language. They spoke the hieroglyphic, but also they communicate with ancient Mesopotamia. And there is letters in cuneiform between Egypt and Mesopotamia. And for the Egyptian king to actually renew his anniversary of kingdom, he actually have to expand the kingdom. And in Egypt, he occupied actually where modern day they call the Sham area, which is Syria, Damascus area. And he actually expanded it in Africa. That's one of the biggest kingdoms in Egypt. Another kingdom we could say that is Uxhal in Ethiopia. The story, the biblical story, is the Queen Sheba. She was a queen of the Horn of Africa, and she occupied Yemen. Modern-day Yemen is southern Arabia. And she was the queen of Yemen while she was lived there. She married King Solomon of the Bible, the great King Solomon. The story is when they got married, and that story is in the Bible, in the Torah, and in the Quran. So it's in the Jewish book, Christian, and Islam, they actually confirmed that Queen of Sheba. She married King Solomon. The story is that they had a son named Melnik. Melnik, he decided to travel to his motherland, which is in Habesha, which is Ethiopia. And he took the Ten Commandments with him of Moses. And he traveled the river, and he traveled there and became the king of that area. And he took the Ten Commandments there. Also, later on, one of the three kings, he traveled to Ethiopia and he took the Nile up. He went up the Nile, and he's the first person ever accepted Jesus as a savior. And they called themselves the Orthodox, means the old traditional way, the original way. And he built the first monastery in history to worship as a Christ, as a Lord, on the Nile. And they say the first one is modern-day Egypt or modern-day Sudan. And he traveled all the way the Nile, and he took the Ethiopian side. And he actually lived in Ethiopia, and he brought Christianity to Ethiopia. So the Horn of Africa is very well known. The Uxhal, he ruled it. And if you go to north of Ethiopia, you'll see all the monument and the churches and the lecture and the language he used, the alphabet that they used. Actually, they used the old Himyarite writing, which they used in Yemen, because in Africa there was no writing. So he actually used the Yemen old Arabic writing called Himyarite writing, and he brought it to the Horn of Africa, and they wrote and spoke. That's why Ethiopian language and the writing is a little bit off from any other language you know. Even their New Year celebration, the celebration of New Year is different because due to their calendar. Then we go down to another kingdom which have the same things, one of the border and the line and the system, which is the Zulu kingdom of South Africa. And it's basically started, the father of it is Shaka Zulu. And Shaka Zulu, he discovered a way, technique of a war, they call it the horn of the bull. Basically, he put the strongest men in the middle as a straight line. Then he bring the youngest guys who have zero experience in war in a shape like two horns of a bull. And he ran them. So when he attacked the army heads on, the strongest armies in the middle, and the rest will rotate in almost a circle, and they capture the enemy. With that, he conquered Durban and all this area. Till the West came, and actually his descendants couldn't keep up with the new moderate word of the British Empire, and they lost. And they went actually plead to Queen Victoria to give them there, because Swaziland got their, the Mswati got his kingdom, which is Swaziland, and descendant of the Mswati still rule, and Durban wanted to be the capital, but the Queen Victoria refused to give him a kingdom because the Shaka Zulu live in every Zulu warrior. They call them Zulu warriors because they're fighters, and she didn't want to have any person to rebel against her later on. And then there is another one, which is in modern-day capital, Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe means the House of Rock. And if you go to the north of Zimbabwe, the Great Zimbabwe, what they call it, they have an area was castle built in a rock. And a lot of people came in the West and says, is African sophisticated to actually build stone, a mansion, or a fort? And with archaeology and historian, they actually found this is a trade route. In Zimbabwe today, there's two tribes. There is the Shona, which actually do not come from this area. They come from a tribe comes from north of Cameroon, and they migrated to east southeast Africa. The other tribe, which they run away from, the Zulu warriors, they call the Dibali. And Dibali lived in there, and they developed that area. They ruled from Zimbabwe to Mozambique to south of Tanzania. And actually, they have trade money with the Muslim Empire in that time. And that trade money came to the Mozambique, and they found the coins which written in Arabic in the Islamic Empire. And they have islands. From those islands, they actually travel throughout the ocean. And that is and the East Africa three. There is a fourth one, which is the second biggest empire in Africa, which is in Mali. It started in Senegal and in Guinea, and descended to Mali, and Timbuktu was the capital. And the biggest person ever in history, I'll say it is Masai Musa. And the Masai Musa, he was the first person took an Arabic alphabet. He carried the religion of Islam, and he took the alphabet of Arabic, and he wrote African languages in alphabet. So historian, when they went to Timbuktu and Jenin University, they open up the books and they found extinct languages that Africans spoke and no one speaks it anymore, but they found it lively in book written in the Arabic alphabet, but it's in African languages. So he's the first person wrote in history, as the West we always have documented. He was the first guy in Africa to have a solid documented in science and writing, that he built the biggest fleet, and he decided to cross the Atlantic and to discover the New World. And the history, they said he went all the way to Senegal, built his biggest fleet, and he crossed the Atlantic, and he never returned, and no one heard from him after that. So that was the first attempt by African to discover the New World. His son, Kankar Musa. His son, Kankar Musa, known in history, is the first African who did pilgrimage to Mecca. He was so wealthy that the science and archaeology anthropologists rated him as the richest man in earth ever lived. He collected 80 camels of pure gold, and he went to Mecca to do his pilgrimage as a Muslim, one of the five pillars of Islam. While he was crossing in Egypt, the price of gold in Egypt went so low as a bread price because of how much gold he entered that country. And he was donated to the poor, as a Muslim has to do, one of the five pillars. When he went to Mecca, he loved the Arab scholars, i.e. chemists, physics, surgeons, poets, that he weighed every science or a poem or an artist weighed in gold if he comes to Timbuktu and he teaches his science, to pass his science, that he donated all his wealth till he found one poet, and that poet was from Basra, modern-day Iraq, and he loved his poetry. When he went to him and he told him, I want you to come back in Africa and I want you to teach what you your knowledge in Africa, he told him, well, you have to pay me for leaving my family, and I'll pay you a weight in gold. His companion came and says, we don't have no more gold. And the only thing he had is his crown. He lifted his crown and he told him, that's the only thing I give you. I want you to come to Africa. And all 80 camels was filled with scientists, scholars of the Middle East, which was the golden age in Middle East, while European has the dark ages. And they went and they built the University of Jenin, which is in Mali as we speak. And that kingdom was one of the biggest kingdom in Africa. The other kingdom is built in modern day Morocco, and it's two kingdoms, one by the Amazigh and one by the Western Saharas actually came in, and they carried the Islamic faith as well. And the Islamic faith was expanded and strong, and whoever deviated from it, another power came and took. And one of the expansion of that, they actually occupied Spain. And the person who opened Spain was a Amazigh warrior named Tariq bin Ziyad. As Tariq, the name Tariq, Gibraltar was his, in the fort of Gibraltar, if you ever went, the African built it. And they took Spain and Portugal all the way to southern France in Lyon. And they lost one of the battles in Lyon with Great Charlemagne of France. And the African occupied it all that 600 years. Of Spain was ruled by them. The European called them the Moorish people. The Moorish mean dark skin because they varied from lighter skin all the way to dark black African. So all of them lived in Spain. That is one of the greatest empire ever lived. And if you go to a city of Marrakesh in Morocco, which is an African word, you could go to Marrakesh and you see the ancient kingdom that the African built, and it's still a trade route. That is, and the last kingdom I'll say is the Shanti Kingdom. You find it in Bay of Guinea, which is in modern-day Togo, Nigeria, and Benin. They have one of the, if you watch the movie The Black Panthers, all the statue in the museum, British Museum, came from that area. They fired the iron. They bent it, the steel. They actually have the art of bronze, and all the statues and the mask they do. Most of the masks you see in Africa, people say, I went to Africa, I want to get a mask. The mask only exists in West Africa. It does not exist in East Africa. So if you go to West Africa, the drums, the masks, all came from West Africa. And that's one of the great empire, and their empire ruled gold. And if you see people from Ghana, their traditional clothes always has the color gold, because in the jungle they discovered gold. And that the first people, believe it or not, in history, they enslaved people to work in the gold mine. So they enslaved other tribes in Africa, so the Africans, other tribes could work, dig up the mines and clean up the forest to find gold. There were the traders of gold, and even the clothes represent the cloth with gold, and the king sits on the crown of gold. And the last kingdom I talked about, maybe sixth one, is in Uganda. And the king of Uganda, they call it the Luganda language. And in Uganda, they had another kingdom that the British called it the Pearl of of Africa. And actually, the only reason they took Kenya to build a railroad, a train, to go from Mombasa all the way to the Pearl, which is Uganda today. And that is another kingdom that we could talk specifically. I'm just giving you a heads up of five to six kingdoms that has a border, has a pyramid, has a government, has this one. Even the West testify about that. When they took slaves, usually they took slaves from Congo and Angola region. But when they came to plantation, by request, I was just recently in Georgia and in Southeast United States. They requested for West African because they have the knowledge of rice plantations. Because African harvest rice for thousands of years. African knew sugarcane and all this plantation and cotton. So they refused to get people who are hunter-gatherers and get West Africans, because West African has the knowledge. They know how to write, know how to read. They came with a religion. 99% of the West Africans that came, they were Muslims. And the Muslims came in, as you could see here, even the black people of North America, they say peace or peace up. And where the peace is, the greeting of Islam is assalamu alaikum. And salam means peace, and that's the word still exist from the ancient root of West Africa. The West Africans came in here, they knew languages. They know how to write or read because they carried the Muslim faith, some of them. And they came in here and by the whip, they actually had to convert and they have to change their last name and the first name from African name. The history of Africa, there is a wise man said, you have to know your past to know your future, as Bob Marley sang about. And he's one of the first people, he actually opened a map and he said, where do I come from? And that's another story altogether.
Have a good time with Mucho Cultural Radio.